Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Benjamin R. Harrison. Hey, Adam. I have a bit of a scandal to bring to your attention.
Oh, really?
Now, you are recording not from your normal spot today.
It's true.
So, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to do much about this, but I was sitting up here editing an earlier episode in our podcast series, and I was noticing that I had Star Trek cards all over my desk, and so I decided to organize them numerically, and in so doing, I noticed that I only have odd-numbered cards.
What?
Yeah. I mean, I have, like, dozens of cards open now. Not a single one is an even number.
That is really weird.
Isn't that wild? I mean, there must be, like, the box is in either an even box or an odd box, but kind of a crazy conspiracy, right?
I thought for sure that we've had duplicate cards before, though.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, do you also have an odd box? And what are the evens?
Wow, I don't know. That's pretty scandalous, dude.
Yeah. So,
I think what it means is I'm gonna have to buy us two more boxes and pray to God that they're evens. Otherwise, never gonna finish our set.
I know. I was actually pretty impressed at how like evenly distributed across. I have literally the card for the first episode and the card for the last episode, and a pretty like even distribution across the interceding episodes, but no evens. So I have like Encounter at Farpoint Part 1, and then no Encounter at Farpoint Part 2, and then I have the Naked Now, and that's card number 3.
Wow. This has got to be only interesting to us. But that's pretty bizarre.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, I bought our boxes at the same time. So whatever Star Trek card purveyor that I bought from fucked us, Ben. They really fucked us.
Yeah. Well, should we get into this episode?
Speaking of fucking, let's turn the page to Season 3, Episode 25. Transfigurations.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Ben, I think this is an all-time great opening scene.
Yeah, this is a scene that opens with Worf and Geordi in 10 forward. Worf's got a pink drink. Geordi's got a blue drink.
Geordi's drinking Hypnotic.
Yeah. And they're gonna mac on some chicks, or at least Geordi is gonna try to. But Worf has some words of advice for Geordi that don't necessarily translate into human courtship rituals.
Words come later. It is the scent that first speaks of love.
We see, like, the maybe, like, the definingly uncomfortable Geordi talking to a woman scene.
Yeah, he sees his old pal Christy across the room.
Don't stare.
Why not?
Because she'll see.
Yeah.
She's looking pretty fine. She's just one of her friends.
And yeah. She's in her civvies, too.
Yeah.
So she got a little dolled up to come to 10 Forward tonight. Geordi and Worf are in their uniforms.
Worf is like, what's the big deal? Like, you want her to know that you know that she's there. what's the problem? Geordi's like, you just don't understand. And in Worf's way, Worf understands completely. Like,
yeah.
None of his advice is weird or wrong or oddly Klingon. It's just like, make your intentions known.
I had to wonder, because Geordi has taken great exception to Worf's idea of sex in the past.
Is this your idea of sex?
Is Worf intentionally kind of fucking with Geordi here? Has he, like, laid in wait until the time was right and Geordi asked his advice on how to talk to a girl, and now he's like, the time has come, he is springing his trap?
It's hard to tell, because it seems like Worf's a little bit sincere with his advice. He's like, one piece of advice is hilarious. He's like,
you must let her see the fire in your eyes.
Which, saying that to someone like Geordi is hilarious. It's like asking Picard to show Vash's manageable flake-free hair. Like, it just can't be done.
Yeah. Asking Data to show a woman his flush, boyish skin.
Yeah. I mean, what he's trying to do, I think, is play into Geordi's strengths, or at least away from his weaknesses. Like,
right.
Which are saying anything at all is a weakness for Geordi. So Worf is like, play up the other senses. Like,
yeah.
Your eyes and and your smell. Good advice, Worf.
I feel like Geordi probably smells pretty good.
Sure. I bet his visor smells like a retainer, though.
Yeah, they've never shown the like large cup of water that he puts it in at his bedside.
He's got to brush it every night.
Yeah.
Gross.
But Chris,
about 90% of our viewership knows exactly what that smell is.
Yeah. That's the opposite of a 2%er, Adam.
Yeah, it's true.
So Geordi does not build up the nerve to go up and kick it to this girl, but she does, and so she comes to like get a refill at the bar and manages to line it up so that she comes in right alongside Geordi, which is an invitation to say hi. At the very least, and Geordi totally clams up, and Worf in the scene is like, holy mackerel, so much fun.
He is so ashamed.
He could not be more uncomfortable.
He's showing more shame in this scene than he was when his family name is forever tarnished on the Klingon homeworld. Like, he doesn't have that much shame.
Yeah. So Christy, clearly a little bit disappointed that she's not going to be going back to Geordi's place tonight, heads back to finish her hangout with her friend, and Geordi gets called up by Commander Riker, and he's being ordered to go on an away mission, and he's like, listen, Commander, I've been sitting here drinking with Worf all night. I'm half in the bag. I'm not going on an away mission right now. He's sort of pulling a Pulaski. Like, he's taking over the alcohol enthusiast role on the show. But they beam down to this planet, and there's like a wreck, and it's I guess an escape pod, and there's a guy that's kind of like pinned under some of the wreckage, and he's in pretty rough shape, and the doctor is like, listen, the only way we're going to stabilize him enough to beam him out of here is if somebody lends me their mind power. I guess she's going to do kind of like a digital autonomic mind meld with this guy where somebody's like brainwaves and breathing are going to regulate her patient's brainwaves and breathing. And so she puts like a chip on this guy, like directly on this guy's face wound, and then she puts another chip on Geordi's dome, and like a little puff of magic comes out of the man. Goes into Geordi, and he's like momentarily overwhelmed.
Yeah, because he's not in pain, right? He flinches a little bit, and he's like, "No, Doc, I'm cool."
The only thing that they recover from this ship, other than the guy, is like one of the large size bottles of blue Powerade. And there's a long, very weird scene where Captain Picard is holding this bottle of Powerade out in front of him. Like his arm extended, holding it like he's waiting for somebody to take it from him.
Yeah, but it's on the bridge too.
Yeah, the whole bridge crew is talking about this thing. They're like, oh, is it like a computer component or a memory device? Something, you know, it's clearly like part of the navigation system or something like that, you know, based on where it was relative to other broken components that we found.
It's hilarious because it's in the one place and in the one person's hands that it can affect the least. Like it should be in a lab somewhere, but instead it's in Picard's hands.
Yeah, and I think that I don't know. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit, but I detected that Patrick Stewart made a choice to play this for the captain is very annoyed that nobody is coming and taking this weird object away from him.
Yeah, yeah, the way he holds it out in front of him, it's like he's holding a check waiting for a server to grab it.
Yeah, he's like, listen, I told you when we sat down that we're going to a show tonight. I need you to make this happen a little bit more quickly. So yeah, that's like establishing the B storyline. The A storyline is the doctor resuscitating this wounded alien back to health.
Yeah, and he's looking pretty rough. His face is totally covered in meatloaf. His arm looks basically severed. He's really fucked up.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, by all accounts, his sync up with Geordi was instrumental in saving his life. So he's in a bio bed.
Yeah. They had like a real intense bio bed for this, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they had like extra Barbasol like running directly into it.
Yeah. They have a Barbasol Powerade mix. like a good 50-50 mix going into him.
Yeah. Hey, that's the choice of champions, right?
Yeah, you get some distilled water and some antifreeze in there. Yeah.
And so this kind of like takes place over the course of a number of scenes, and like there's varying levels of weird spacey bandages on his face and whatnot, but eventually, it's revealed that John Doe looks real nice with his shirt off. There's a shot where it comes back and he's like basically back to looking pretty normal, and he's all like oiled up and shirtless, but he's still unconscious. Then he like grabs the doctor, and she's pretty much like, "All right, I gotta fuck this dude." Like, she is in.
Her attraction to him is so instantaneous. Like it happened on the planet surface. Like she was down. He was a bag of meat down there, and she was like, "Oh, I gotta find a way to save this guy. I gotta show him all my wigs."
Yeah, maybe.
She's like, "I gotta find myself a man who can do both, and one is like the normal guy, and the other looks like he's been dragged behind a motorcycle for 10 miles."
That's what she's into. I feel like the doctor winds up betting a kind of disconcerting number of her patients. Did it feel like that to you? Maybe I'm making this one episode more of her character than there actually is, but I feel like this isn't the only time she's kind of wanted to bang with.
She's definitely Florence Nightingaling, right?
I guess so. I don't know. The doctor gets into these like bodice rippery kind of storylines every so often.
Yeah, I don't know. As she's doing her scan on him, she's like, "Well, the whole reason this guy pulled through his terrible accident is because every cell in his body is mutating at the same time,
yeah,
and it's fixing itself up."
It's not just fixing itself up, though. It's like the parts of him that weren't fucked up are changing also.
And that's the angle, too. She's like, it's not just a matter of his body healing. It's a matter of his entire body changing.
Yeah.
It is the guiding principle of a Darth Vader's base. Have you not find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth? You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
One other thing we should talk about is this episode seems to take place over the course of maybe like 2 months, which is very strange for a TNG episode. I don't think that they're usually set on that kind of time scale, because like everybody wears the same clothes all the time, and so like it might be like later the same day, or it might be two weeks from now. But you know, like at one point Riker hops on the elevator with Geordi
and Christy walks out saying, "This is where I get off," and then she leaves, and like there's no more perfect line of dialogue than a girl saying that to Geordi as she's leaving.
Like, yeah, well, it's definitely implied that Riker and Christy have gotten down in the past.
Yeah.
But Riker is really delighted by this new confidence that Geordi has. Like Geordi is like, yeah, I'm the man now. And there's like all these, there's all this fun and games around that. Like, you know, when he first goes and like, actually talks to her in 10 forward, Data is like completely baffled by this, and Worf leans over and is like,
"I've been tutoring him. He learns very quickly.
You know, he's my protege."
Geordi's behavior is so strange to Data that you could see it just sort of breaking him.
Yeah, yeah. Data's gonna have to go reset his positronic net after this.
The other thing about this guy, this John Doe guy, is he has no memory.
Right.
And that's a big problem, because they found his body on this planet. They sort of want to return him to owner.
Right. And
they don't know where to take him.
Right.
So it's kind of a mystery on that front, too.
Yeah, and this is like a real classic Jason Bourne type of memory loss trope where he's lost all of his memory, and then like, just when it is convenient for the plot, like little scraps come back. And this happens more later in the episode, but like when he perceives danger, you know, it's like instinct, but then he's like, oh yeah, like yeah, that's a bad guy.
His Jason Bourne power is sort of like opposite Jason Bourne, because his compulsion is to heal instead of break someone's arm into a compound fracture knot.
Yeah. Yeah,
one of the fun scenes where you realize this is they're in sick bay, and Chief O'Brien walks in with a separated shoulder.
Yeah,
because I guess he really likes going kayaking in 1986 as his holodeck program.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Beverly's like, separated shoulder again.
Yeah, nope.
Chief O'Brien's like, yep.
Nobody more incongruent in sick bay than like body glove, wetsuit O'Brien.
Yeah, you could just see like the gaff tape imperfectly taped over the body glove logo.
Yeah,
it's great.
And John Doe like lays hands upon him and totally Jesus's the shoulder pain away.
Yeah,
and that's pretty wild. Nobody knows what to make of that, and they don't really, like, look into it at all. They don't, like, you know, give a rat a shoulder injury and say, like, can you reproduce that? You know,
they don't use the scientific method, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
They just sort of watch in awe.
Yeah. Like, they turn into medieval peasants when he starts going around healing people with his hands.
They realize that John Doe's special power is fixing broken things, and that sort of serves to explain what he did to Geordi's mind.
Yeah. Right.
Which up until now has seemed irreparably broken.
Yeah.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurseth the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
So the doctor continues to be quite taken with this man, and in fact, she has dinner with Wesley.
The boy.
At one point. And this is kind of his only scene of any length in this episode, I feel like.
Yeah.
And he basically spends it just kind of digging into her level of interest in getting down with John Doe. Like, it's a really, I don't know.
in a very classy way, Wes is like, you kind of want to fuck him, don't you?
Yeah.
And in a very demure kind of way, she's like, well, I don't know. I just think he's cool. That's all.
Yeah. And he rocks a lot of nuck now that he's got this white uniform on.
It is Hall of Fame nuck. Like, I feel like we've gotten quite a few guest stars rocking the nuck on this show.
Yeah.
And this guy is on the Mount Rushmore of nuck.
Mount Nuckmore.
The thing about Mount Nuckmore is that it's not faces on the mountain.
No, it's just Kyle Riker's groin. And the other thing about this...
It's
this
Kyle cast, Riker, it's Q, it's John Doe. Who's the fourth? Do we have a fourth?
Somebody from the Edo.
Yeah, that's right. It is that guy from the Edo.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's a t-shirt.
That is totally a t-shirt. Oh, man.
One thing I wondered about this costume is he has been around on this ship for a couple weeks now, recovering. He was in like a blue onesie before, but then he's like well enough to start walking around the ship. So you have to assume that he goes over to like the replicator and goes like, let me get some civilian clothing. The computer shows him some options and he's like, head to toe white space turtleneck, please. And I want it to be like pretty nuck forward.
In the future, the body glove brand is taken very literally.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. There's no belt line. It is just a wall of white.
Yeah.
It's just smooth as an envelope.
I wrote down the word Nuckapalooza in my notes, but I like Mount Nuckmore so much more.
Yeah, I do too. I just wrote down all caps HOF Nuck, as in Hall of Fame Nuck.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
They cut back to the Powerade bottle storyline every so often. And one of the things that's happened with Geordi's mind working so good all of a sudden is that he's able to work out what this thing is. And he figures out that it's a star map.
The way he puts it, though, is like, he's like, you know, I was thinking about this part last night.
Yeah. I was lying on my super uncomfortable pillow.
It was established earlier in the episode that he's been spending every night with Christy. So I was thinking that this was his thinking about baseball. He was thinking about this Powerade bottle.
Oh, but now that he has the Ring of Jesus fire, does he need to think about baseball or is he just that good?
Did John Doe fix him in a super sexual manner?
I mean, you have to assume, right?
Was his confidence his only improvement?
I guess maybe that would be true if Riker also laid hands on Geordi, but only John Doe did. So yeah, they figure out this is a star map and they run a trajectory on where the pod came from that they found. And it just happens to be on the path that they're already traveling
on. That's convenient.
Which is like screenwriting 101. That is never how something is supposed to work in a movie or a television show. That is a classic moment where Star Trek has an opportunity to raise the stakes and they go in the opposite direction. Like, it's a head fake toward raising the stakes at all.
There are infinite possibilities of where this guy came from and the ship came from. And it just so happens that they hit the lottery, that
right,
they can just drop this guy off on their way to their final destination.
Right. So it's like it completely lets the air out of that being a storyline that we have any investment in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyways, they...
And it's so unnecessary, too. Like,
yeah.
What would be the harm in course correcting?
Right. If they say, like, boy, like the admirals are going to really breathe down my neck if we don't keep doing the science mission we're on, or whatever the fuck they're doing.
The hood's gonna beat us there if we don't step on it.
Yeah, Captain DeSoto is never gonna stop gloating around the Admiral's Club at Starfleet Command.
So they're like, great, we can drop this guy off on our way to our errand, and we aren't even going to be late for it.
Yeah,
it's going to be cool.
Like, usually we're doing Uber X, but this is kind of like Uber Pool.
And they're like, somebody tell John Doe that we're going to drop him off. He's going to be super stoked about it. And John Doe is not stoked. John Doe's memories have been coming back at a rate that's hastened to the point where he is very apprehensive about returning to his home planet. Mm-hmm. He has it in his head that he has indeed fled his planet and was intending to escape when his ship crashed.
And so they're like, well, you know, like we're still super far from there. 3 more weeks before we're even close. So let's keep thinking on it. But that's the plan at the moment. So they're getting closer and closer to this planet, and they discover on long range sensors that there's a ship coming in at like super high warp, like really like maxing out its engine, and the ship isn't responding to hails or anything, and so they're like getting a little uneasy about this situation, but they keep going, and then finally this ship comes out of warp and it's like right on top of them, and they manage to I guess the ship scans them and then they're willing to talk. I guess, yeah, because they like didn't want to talk to them unless they knew that John Doe was aboard. Because they're like isolationists, right?
Yeah.
So these are a type of alien that call themselves Zalconians, and the head guy has real like Francis from Pee-wee's Big Adventure vibes.
Francis.
Yeah.
He's chewing a stick of gum that makes black goo come out of his mouth.
Yeah, he has sort of a permanently furrowed brow.
Yeah, takes a bath in a huge tub with really highly realistic naval boat toys in it.
So they're on their way to meet the Zalconians, and they break the news to John Doe, and John Doe is like, let me off this ship. If you don't let me off, I'm just going to leave. And he books it out of Six Bay, and in a very slow trot, sort of jogs his way to a shuttle bay where he begins trying to jake a shuttle pod.
Yeah.
He's like hitting buttons, hitting switches, yeah, trying to get this bunk bed to leave. And Worf and a crew of dustbusters come in to try to stop him. So he's sort of on this upper level.
Yeah, he's up in like
up above the bed.
The control tower level.
And Beverly's down below, and she's trying to talk him down, and Worf kind of peels off, takes a little side turbo lift up to the top.
Yeah.
And tries to talk him out of it. He's like, look, man, I don't want to hurt you, but you got to back away from those controls. Like back away now before I shoot you. And John Doe kind of talks like Jason Bourne in this scene. He's like, you need to back away from me. I don't know what I'm capable of.
Right.
Trust me on this. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is he wings him over the railing. And
Well, he doesn't wing him over the railing. He gets like up. He's like, part of his like body changing is that occasionally he gets like a glowing pulse out of his chest.
Do not come any closer. I cannot control what is happening to me.
And this one is like sufficient to blast Worf back, and Worf goes ass over tea kettle onto the lower deck of the hangar bay, and
lands right on his neck. This scene, I thought, was a great lesson in close-up editing, because in season one they would have cut wide to the stuntman, and then they would have cut back close again on Michael Dorn on the ground. And they did 3 rapid cuts with that, which I thought was great. They did low angle shooting up, so you definitely know it's Michael Dorn.
Yeah.
They did the mid angle as Worf falls past, also Michael Dorn. And then the low angle parallel to the floor when Worf hits his neck.
Yeah.
It was fucking great.
A show that has come a long way in
so far. Like, there's no mattress to be seen. There's no frumpy stuntman. Like, it was great. It was so great that you don't notice it, which was key.
I mean, also, they only have the one stuntman that always plays Data, so...
Yeah, that wouldn't have looked right.
It would have been pretty bad to try and make that guy look like Worf.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a well executed stunt.
Yeah, and so Worf is down, and then we find out a second later that his neck is broken and he's fucking dead. Yeah. So John Doe comes down. Maybe he uses the fireman's pole to get down there, but he's down there in an instant. And after laying his hands on him, Worf wakes up.
Yeah. I feel like there's another episode where Worf suffers a traumatic brain injury or like a back, breaks his back or something.
Do you think Beverly would have yelled to the sky in Worf's honor, like to warn
the dead that a warrior was coming?
Yeah. Do you think Worf saw Stovalkor?
Oh, man, he was, like, floating toward it, and he was like, yeah. These assholes don't even know what's about to hit him because there was no Klingons around to yell.
It's definitely not a white light, right?
No.
It's probably, like, red strobe lights.
I don't think it's in TNG, but maybe in Deep Space Nine, I feel like they actually depict Stovalkor as, like, a boat. It's like a pirate boat.
Oh, that's great.
I could be wrong. It seems like... It's maybe that's just something I had like
it's
in a
fever
dream. It's
the Kid Rock cruise ship.
Yeah. I am the cutest of all. You will assist us.
I am the cutest of all. You are all. So John Doe's basically more Jesus than Ginger Jesus ever was.
Yeah, Ginger Jesus has left the building. John Doe is here to stay.
And this should fucking melt everyone's minds. Like, they've seen him lay hands on Chief O'Brien and Worf.
Right. Fixing somebody's rotator cuff injury is one thing. Bringing somebody back from the dead.
I feel like it's worthy of at least a, whoa! but no one does anything.
Yeah.
They really play it cool. What's great is that they cut to the ready room. And John Doe and Beverly and Picard are in there having a little meeting. And Picard's like, dude, you would be in big trouble if Worf was actually dead. Like, the only reason that you're not in cuffs right now is because you brought him back to life.
Like, yeah.
What a weird concept. Like,
yeah.
He did kill him. He killed a bridge officer.
Right. It's not like if I go steal somebody's car and give the car back a week later, that doesn't unsteal the car.
Right. Right. It's so weird. Picard's like, yeah, we don't really know what you are, and you clearly don't have your memory back.
Yeah.
He's
like, we have no law to fit your crime.
John Doe again is like, I'm not going over to that ship, by the way. Like, the Zalconians have said, this guy's dangerous. You're going to beam him back over to us, and we're going to execute him, because that's what he deserves.
Picard talking to, what's the guy's name? Sanad, Captain Sanad?
Of that other ship, yeah.
Yeah. Is trying to kind of manage this situation, because the Zalconians are clearly, like, an isolationist race. They don't want anything to do with anybody else. He's like, you know, like, we just travel around trying to, like, get to know people and have cool hangs. And they're like, we don't want cool hangs. We don't want anything. And we just want that guy so that we can kill him. And Picard is like, all right, well, you're going to have to like kind of convince me that there's a really good reason for me to give him back to you. Cause we're not really down with the whole like corporal punishment thing.
Not only are we not down with that punishment, but like all indications are that this guy's peaceful. He just wants to put his hands on people.
Yeah. And so it looks like it's about to come to a head when...
Sunad's like, you're going to give him back to us, or... And then he sort of like gives an indication to his tactical officer, and he basically force chokes the entire Enterprise crew.
Yeah, and were you under the impression that this was a weapon that they have, or do they have like mind powers also, just not nearly as advanced as... As John does.
I thought it was a weapon because of his gesture to someone else on his bridge.
Yeah.
I thought if it was a mind power, he would have just stayed focused on the FaceTime.
Yeah. It was weird, though. Like, they never address what that was or like, you know, like I feel like when the Federation meets a species that has like something on that's more powerful than them like that, they're like, oh fuck, like we got to develop some kind of defense against this typically.
Yeah.
And we never hear about these people again.
Yeah, another bottle alien.
Yeah. So
so everyone's down and choking. And so we cut to Six Bay and John Doe puts his hands on Beverly, wakes her up, and then they go out into the corridor, wake up another random crewman, and then John Doe puts his hands on the ship.
Yeah.
And blows his gold dust all over the entire ship, and that wakes everyone up. Here's what's weird, Ben. So we cut back to the bridge as the bridge crew wakes up, and Data gets up too.
Yeah.
Data was down.
What was going on with Data?
I don't know. That was a weird scene.
Yeah. Data's vulnerabilities are very much at the mercy of the plot a lot of the time.
Yeah. I feel like he's the one guy that could probably survive that.
What do you think if Data, if everybody starts getting choked on the bridge and Data is still there, like he's the second officer of the ship. Does he go start like laying out spreads of photon torpedoes and stuff?
I wish we got that scene.
Man, that would have been cool, right?
That would have been great. He's the only crewman that ship needs, really.
Well, anyways.
So John Doe makes his way to the bridge, and Picard, sort of lawyer Picard Sunad, he's like, look, your weird force choke power isn't going to work on us because we've got an all-powerful person over here that we're kind of not feeling like beaming over to your ship now for your corporal punishment. So what are you going to do about that? At this point, John Doe begins feeling the forces of transformation even more acutely, right?
Yeah.
He starts spazzing out a little bit.
Well, and he brings Sanad over. Like, he like pulls him through the view screen, like like it's a proscenium, you know?
Like he's the well girl from the Ring movie?
Yeah. And I never saw the movie, only the million parodies of it that we were forced to watch for like 2.5 years, but...
Oh, no.
But yeah, like he like raises a hand and Sinad is suddenly standing nose to nose with Picard and he's freaking out, you know, cause, he wasn't expecting to not be on his ship and he doesn't want to talk to aliens.
Yeah. I really feel a great amount of sympathy for him in that moment.
Yeah. I mean, he is a murderous meanie. And he is rocking a little bit of a knuck of his own.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like there to take John Doe home and he's too late. So what we get is that this species, the Zalconians, have been aware of people that have been on the path to make this transformation for a long time. And they've been saying it's a disease and it's fatal and killing these people because they knew that it was going to make them more powerful than the leadership of their society. And they feared that power. And so John Doe escaped and he's the first one of them to ever have gotten as far as he's gotten. And just then he turns into a being of pure light. And or a guy in a green screen suit that they put a little glow effect on in post.
He totally like dons Charlie's Green Man costume from Always Sunny.
Yeah.
Like it's incredibly bad. It was one of the worst effects ever. It's like in post, they had a chance to ramp the glow up all the way to 100% and they put like a 20% glow on it.
Yeah, it's weird.
You can see his mouth move inside the bodysuit.
You can see the wrinkles on the back of the neck.
Yeah, he looks like a package of hot dogs.
He really does. Yeah.
Like this was an okay episode up until this moment.
Yeah, it doesn't live up to the rest of the episode. For sure.
Yeah.
But, they've demonstrated that he's now, like, Dowd powerful, and therefore...
Mr. Doe. I am now aware of your presence in the universe.
If you'd like to come out and hang with me and Q, we're planning a boys' night. We're thinking we'll go to the Sonic Drive-In and then perhaps catch a film at a drive-in movie theater. We're just really into driving right now. Being all powerful, it seems like comically ironic. Listen, if we do the drive-in thing, you're going to have to hide in the trunk because we don't want to pay full price. I don't want to pay four fares. They always charge for my real doll in the back seat, even though I've told them over and over she's not really alive.
Oh, man. Yeah, the Omnipotent Club has gained a member here.
Yeah. So they send Sanad back to his ship. They say their goodbyes to Being of Pure Light, and he turns into like a kind of a weird fireball. And the last shot is the fireball like popping up out of the lid of the ship and zipping off into space. Roll credits.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
He kind of gives Beverly one of those, the thing that you only see in TV and movies where he grazes her cheek and chin with the back of his hand.
Yeah, totally.
In affection.
Yeah.
Like, You can't do that in real life.
It would have been fun if she'd been like, oh, it burns. It burns so much.
Yeah.
He does sort of look like a hot element on a on an electric stove, you know?
Yeah. Well, he'd immediately be able to heal her if he burned her, right. I guess.
Yeah.
It's unclear if after his departure, Geordi gets to keep his powers, right? But I guess if he heals Worf and he heals O'Brien, like, if he left and that weren't the case, like, Worf would be dead and O'Brien would have a re-dislocated shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I headcanon my way back into a, that making sense now.
Well,
yeah,
something
so Geordi gets to keep his confidence, right?
His macking on chicks ability.
God.
Something we'll have to watch for in season 4.
I'm a little disappointed that this might be the end of Creeper Geordi. He was very fun to make fun of.
Yeah, well, all good things, Adam.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. I think you're right that it's a bit dopey the way they pulled the effects off at the end. But
they just fucking kneecapped the episode with that. It was so bad.
Yeah. I mean, but it is ultimately kind of a bottle up and just, you know, I don't know.
Do you think they knew that no one would ever remember it because of the episode that's coming up next?
Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
This watched to me like a brand new episode. I didn't remember it at all.
I remembered parts of it, it did feel kind of, like a storyline that hasn't stuck with me. Like, I wonder if some future date when I haven't watched the show in a while, if I come back to it, if it will feel like that again. I almost feel like it will.
Mm. Yeah.
Because, like, it's very plotty, but there's, like, really, like, dumb, like, I don't know, like, the plot isn't like that meaningful ultimately, like when they discover that the Powerade can is just a map that's leading them to the where they've already been headed, is like, are you fucking kidding me? Why did you write that whole part?
Yeah.
Did somebody come up with a way to make that prop and you were like, all right, let's write something around this?
And like, the postscript is that no one grew as a character except for Geordi, and the only reason that he did is because he was bequeathed special powers.
Yeah.
No one's better except for him.
It's a deus ex machina.
And he got better cheaply.
It's a deus sex machina.
It's a deus ex machina.
did you like it, or?
It was, I liked it up until the last 5 minutes. I'll say that.
Fair enough. Adam, I think I hear something coming in over subspace.
Oh, is that what you hear?
Yeah, well, no. I am just throwing to our Jumbotron segment. You want to listen?
I'm recording this in a hotel room, Ben. I thought that was just the next room over. Let's check in on it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first priority one message is a personal message for Megan from Carrie, and it goes like this. Benjamin and Adam, can you sing this given the recent Warner Chappell copyright case, these lyrics and melody are in the public domain?
It also seems to ignore our very rampant and generous interpretation of the fair use doctrine.
Oh, yeah.
I actually sat through a seminar on fair use, and I think we're, like, mostly okay, but we do occasionally probably tiptoe over the line. Okay, so we have to sing the birthday song, but maybe you should do it as Kevin Uxbridge and I should do it as Picosby just to make it fun.
That's great. Do you have one of those one of those harmonizer discs to do that?
Me, 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 me.
Okay, I think I'm ready.
That's really going to clash with the ice cream music that plays underneath this.
This is going to be a mess.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Rudy!
Happy birthday to you. I hope you live forever.
Happy birthday, Megan.
Yeah, happy birthday, Megan.
That's from Carrie.
There's no way that that infringes on anyone's copyright or anyone's sense of good taste.
Yeah, it was just that was good, clean fun. Our next Jumbotron message is from Gonzo and Ben, and it is to Gordon. Message is this. It says, thank you and your son James for being the Captain Picard and Wesley Crusher, the boy, to our Geordi and Data these last years. May your memes be dank, may your Shimodas be drunk, and may your nacelles ever propel you at maximum warp. May your tea always be Earl and gray and also hot. Oh, Captain, our Captain, make it so and engage.
What a nice toast at the end.
Yeah,
I'm inclined to steal that.
Yeah, there was something inscrutable about that. I don't quite know what the relationship is between all these people, but it was very sweet and heartfelt.
Yeah. Yeah, very nice.
It was much easier to do that than sing as Picosby, too.
Yeah, let's never do that again.
I think if we're in for a penny, we're in for a dollar.
Yep. Yep.
That's how that saying goes, right?
Well,
if you'd like to contribute a penny or a dollar to the Jumbotron fund, you can only contribute in $100 increments if you're sending a personal message, or $200 increments if you're sending a commercial message. But all dollars are appreciated because it helps keep the lights on around here. So just go to MaximumFund.org/Jumbotron to secure your message. And this is getting popular. Like, I'm looking at our little chart, and we are all set for the next couple episodes.
I feel like our Jumbotrons might also be dank. As dank as them memes.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Fun.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I did find myself a drunk Shimoda, and my Shimoda in this episode is Worf. The Shimoda is the character that's doing something real silly and fun, and the biggest laugh line of this episode for me was when Worf leans over to Data and Ten Forward and says that he's been mentoring Geordi on the ways of talking to women. Essentially taking credit for Geordi getting that date. Oh man, it made me laugh because I was immediately forced to consider, does Worf actually believe that, or is that just something he's telling Data? Like, I love the idea that Worf is like, wow, like those couple of times I told Geordi some stuff to try when he talks to girls really paid off. Nice going, me.
The entire concept that anyone would tell Data anything to impress him,
I know,
I think is hilarious too.
Oh man. How about yourself? Do you have a drunk Shimoda?
Yeah, mine was also Worf. And I think I just really enjoyed his nonverbal, or Michael Dorn's nonverbal acting,
yeah,
in so many of these scenes. Like how frustrated he was in Ten Forward while everyone's talking shop and Worf just wants to sit and drink.
Yeah.
I think my wife goes through this all the time. Like when we go out with my wife and we're talking about film and video stuff.
Yeah.
She's like, shop talk. And that normally
less
like
talking,
ends our...
more drinking. I think that's a direct quote from your wife.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think we've all felt that way a time or two, and Worf's embodiment of that was familiar and good and fun.
Yeah. Excuse me.
You sound tired, Ben. What time is it over there?
It is past my bedtime over here.
Oh, man. Well, what do we have coming up on the next episode? The
next episode is Season 3, Episode 26, The Best of Both Worlds, Part 1. The evil Borg capture Captain Picard in an attempt to conquer the human race. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Well, that sounds pretty fun. I remember the Borgs.
Yeah, the Borgs. They're back.
He's a Borg. Oh, no!
The Borgs are back in town. The Borgs are back in town.
Yeah, well, unvetoable because this season doesn't have any vetoes left, so I don't think this is one we would veto, right?
Yeah.
This is a pretty important one.
I don't think so. It's a foundational episode.
Yeah.
Which means the pressure's really on, isn't it?
It sure is. Got to get this one right.
Can't afford to fuck this one up.
We're going to have to bring in Picosby. We're going to have to bring in Uxbridge. We're going to have to bring in this old Enterprise. Every warmed over piece of shit joke that we do on every episode is coming back.
Got to play the hits, man. Yeah. Got to play the hits.
Yeah. And then when we talk about the actual plot points, it's like, we're going to do one from our new album. And everybody's like, oh. This will be out in December, guys.
That new impression sucks. Yeah. Everyone goes out to get a beer during the new impression.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if our viewers are as excited about that episode as we are, maybe they'll be excited enough to support our show by going to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah.
Where they can help this show's production. They can also leave a nice review where they download podcasts. Those are also really helpful as well. And they can also reach out to us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen.
There's also a Facebook group that you can join and a Reddit sub that you can join. There's also the Maximum Fun subreddit. All great places to post about the show and debate all of the different jokes that we did not make. I feel like that's one of the main comments is, why didn't you talk about blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, that's why I set up that rule, that mute rule, that is, why didn't you? So far, it's working great.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's great. That's good to hear.
Love it.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea, the Goose, for our Priority One music. And with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that's been turned into a hegemonizing swarm.
Both of my worlds are the best. They're just the greatest world. You have to believe me.
We're going to turn Captain Picard into a Borg and we're going to make him pay for it.
Lots of times you'll only find one world that's the best. I'm telling you, I have the best of both worlds. Believe me.
The Borgs are criminals. They're rapists. And I'm sure some of them are good people. The Trump Tower Grill makes the best Borg bowls.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.